This episode of the Woodsboro podcast contains spoilers for 2022's Scream. Turn back now if you've not seen the movie and don't want to know details of what's in it. In 1996, Wes Craven and Kevin Williamson changed the rules of horror with the movie Scream. It was the beginning of a movie saga that has continued to captivate fans and audiences in the years since the filmmakers first took us to Woodsboro. This podcast is a celebration of Scream and everything that came next. I'm Alex James, and this is the Woodsboro Podcast. Here we are then, well into 2022, and the brand new vision of Scream is out, and audiences around the world are loving it. The box office numbers are huge, rightly so. Fans have waited a long time for this moment. The critics have been kind, and it's looking like there's a whole lot of life in our beloved franchise yet. Now the cat is out of the bag, we can relax a bit and dig a bit deeper into the return to Woodsboro. And I'm delighted that in this episode, literally over the moon, I'm joined by the Radio Silence team. Directors Tyler Gillett and Matt Bettinelli-Olpin and producer Chad Villella. And there's huge relief that they no longer have to carry the world's biggest secrets.
Hi, Alex.
This is amazing. Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, man.
Thanks
thank you
for taking your time.
I think it's safe to say we can do this with the obvious spoiler warning at the top now, but the secrets no longer have to stay.
We've been told this is a spoiler-filled moment we've been waiting for now for 2 years to actually get to talk about the thing.
That's crazy, isn't it? How on earth do you go about, I mean, not just you, but especially David, how have you gone about keeping these secrets for so long?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're a team, so it's nice to talk to each other about them. But yeah, we really took a lot of pains to keep the secret secret. And, you know, there were a lot of different pieces to that puzzle. You know, at first we were just no hard copies of scripts, but as soon as you get on set, that becomes a thing. So at the end of the day, though, I really think credit lies with just people involved with the movie and people who saw the movie understanding that the joy of a movie like this is the experience of watching it for the first time and really kind of uncovering the whodunit and the mystery and the twists and turns in real time and not spoiling it for yourself. So I think kind of hats off to everyone for not spoiling it, because hundreds upon hundreds of people saw the movie and didn't say anything, which is kind of crazy. Unreal. Yeah.
It's very impressive. Yeah. And even on set, I mean, we were dealing with crazy shit. We had somebody like hacking our walkie-talkie lines to steal spoil. Like it was, I know we've never had the experience of that ever before. And it was a wild thing to just try to protect what was valuable the entire time.
Right. Yeah. There were people planted outside at the very beginning too, right? When we were shooting all the indoor stuff for the opening scene with Jenna in the house by herself, but they were just planted outside. And honestly, we shot everything with tinted out windows. So they just were staring at a house that was just tinted the whole way around it. And we came outside for one shot and that was it.
I was just going to say, we killed Judy in broad daylight.
Well, I was going to say
that. Middle of the day.
Yeah.
And there was like the radio guy.
Lockup. Yeah.
Yeah. We had to lock it up in every direction. But I mean, I remember our big fear was still, well, there's still neighbors.
Yeah.
People live here and any of them could just go tweet whatever they want. And again, nobody did.
There were so few pictures of your locations that managed to make it into the press. There was maybe one of Courtney and the two guys outside the bowling alley. But apart from that, yeah, what an absolute dream.
I, by the way, just had a mild heart attack, Matt, when you said Judy gets killed. I was like, oh, right.
Shut up, Matt!
We can talk about
it. We can say anything we want.
Your initial reactions to box office and the critics' response as well, you must just be over the moon, right?
We're thrilled. I mean, you think you always... We're very superstitious, this group. Like, even when people were like, yeah, this is how the movie's tracking, we always liked hearing that it was tracking well. We never wanted to know specifically what the prediction was, because that just is a recipe for disappointment. And I think part of that is just, you know, you come from the indie world where, like us, where you just hope anyone shows up other than your parents.
Disappointment to, like, is built into our bones.
Yeah. And it's, but it's like, you know, a success for a movie like Ready or Not, which was, you know, I think also more bigger than we ever imagined it would be. This is just at a different scale. And I think that is still settling in, not only, you know, the challenge of taking on this specific franchise and what Wes and Kevin built, but then to have it reach people who, many of whom are like just diehard fans, right? And there's a real tightrope we had to walk to make a movie work for them and make a movie work for new audiences. And so to see that working and to have people showing up at the theater is crazy. It's the dream.
At what point in the timeline did you guys collectively go, we are going to get this. This is ours. We want this. We want this project.
Wow, that's a great question. I think honestly, we were just so insanely excited that when we found out that Jamie Vanderbilt was writing the script, we were like, oh my gosh, like one of our friends is actually writing a Scream movie. And we were over the moon ecstatic about that and thought that was like one of the coolest things ever. And then when we found out Guy was writing it with him, we're like, this is amazing, you know, because we knew Guy from Ready or Not and everything else. And we're like, we're able to be fans of theirs for a moment. And then a week after we found that out, they asked us to be a part of it too. And honestly, it was just no hesitant. Like,
I don't think we had any doubt.
A second after that,
just like, let's
it must be
like,
ours.
Like, yeah, it was one of those things where it was like, if this script is like half as funny and entertaining as the text chain we have with them, then it's gonna be something we aren't gonna want to do.
But the pressure that you then carry for the whole process, not just kind of taking it from that point, but obviously all the way through until this weekend, just must be the craziest thing you guys have ever done.
I think that's the right way to define that.
Yeah.
Yes. Without doubt.
And I think part of that was the script was so good too. Like, I think it was, you know, it's one thing when you're like, okay, we have to come in and like fix a thing and like that, the energy is going to be in, you know, making it your own and like getting it, you know, getting it put together the right way. And with this, it was like, okay, beloved franchise that has influenced us on such a huge level. And also the fucking blueprint is so well written. We just can't screw it up. It was like, if it doesn't work, there's no one to blame but yourself. It's yeah, like it's, it, it, it's you, it, it, whether it succeeds or fails is just really about like how you, what the process, the process that you designed to make it. And so that was, I think, where the practical pressure was. I think also certainly just the pressure of wanting to do justice to something we love so much. That was obviously a new feeling for us. You know, this is our first franchise movie, and we definitely felt the weight of that on our shoulders.
So was there a point where you had three different working ideas? So David obviously announced very early, followed by Courtney, and then Nev a little bit later down the line. Would there have been an intention that you could have made this film without one of them in it? Or did it require all three from the start?
It was an all three from the start. You know, it's kind of like what Tyler was just saying about how great the script was and it was ours to mess up. The script is, you know, basically what you saw. Story-wise, it's the same story. And, you know, there were conversations about, well, what if one of them doesn't sign up? What are we going to do? And I don't think anybody, at least I know for the three of us, we never thought beyond that, because for us it was, well, they have to. Like, we have to figure out how to get them in it, because without them, this just won't be right. And, you know, and again, I think testament to the script, they all got on board. And I don't know. I don't think we would have ever been able to make the movie without all three of them.
Yeah.
I know we wouldn't have wanted to.
No, yeah, we wouldn't have. Yeah. And then also having Kevin help too. I think getting Kevin's approval and having him be a part of the process and reach out directly to Nev and Courtney and David and on our behalf once we came on board was really important to us, and knowing that we had his blessing moving forward, and then reaching out to other people in Wes's life too as we were into the process, like talking to Patrick Lussier, who edited the original Scream with him, and making sure that we, you know, were going through the history of Scream and hopefully getting everybody's approval and blessing to make this movie the way we did.
Yeah, and I also think just back to the legacy cast, I think what Guy and Jamie did was they wrote roles that felt essential, which I think is the biggest challenge of like a requel, right? Or the fifth movie in a franchise is how do you make those characters that everyone obviously has a really huge expectation about, you know, how they're going to show up. And there's just so much gravity with who those iconic characters are. It'd be really easy to just have them like pop in and it'd feel really good for a second. And then they leave the movie and it kind of continues on. And I think, you know, what Guy and Jamie did was wrote really essential roles. Like there are so many big pivotal moments in the movie that are based on those characters and the choices they make and their involvement in the story. And it just was, the whole thing, the whodunit is a house of cards, you know, in its own right. A whodunit in this world is a whole different thing. And it really, if you just pulled one of them out, the whole thing just sort of falls apart.
It's funny, isn't it? Because with all the attention kind of like on Spider-Man as well, the comparisons are there. I always, when I saw it, I thought we'd get Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield for maybe like 5 minutes. But the fact that
this is spoilers about Spider-Man too, because
you've seen that, right? You have seen it.
I have not seen it yet.
I haven't seen it yet either.
Yeah, I'm a month and a half out. That's my fault. Yeah,
you've been fairly busy. But yeah, you expect them to be there for a short period of time. But the fact that they are there for such a long period of time really does make it the same rules apply to the legacy cast for Scream as well. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so satisfying that it's like, oh, we're going to do this, but we're actually committing to it. We're committing to it on a deep level. Like we know that you don't just love seeing these characters. You want to see them do the thing that makes you love them, not just an appearance. A cameo is not, it doesn't dig deep enough. And I think to scratch that itch, you have to see them in action in a consequential way. I love the Spider-Man comparison too. Yeah. You know, Scream 5 and Spider-Man.
Money, it's money. So right, let's go through this list. So right, we can start at the beginning. Tara survives the attack, brand new take on it, and in fact fires the final shot, so she sees it all the way through.
Yeah, that was I think one of our favorite things in the script. When Tara survives, that's the first time in the movie that you go, oh, this isn't the same as the others, there's something different about this. And it, you know, that's, I think, when you really start, you have to be on your toes for the rest of the movie, because you suddenly realize like, oh, I thought I understood the formula of these movies, and now I realize that formula might not apply here. It's kind of, it's the exact reverse of the Drew thing. You know, let's kill Drew in the beginning, and then five movies later, let's just not kill someone, and it's shocking.
But you know, savvy enough as well to keep her out of the promo material for the rest of the campaign.
Yeah, hats off to Paramount.
That was a fight. That was a battle.
They were cool with it though.
It's crazy.
Yeah, it was. We had really hoped that they would follow through on that, and they, like, if you look in some of the trailers, you can see her in it, but they VFX out her hair and like tried to hide it a little, hide the ball a little bit.
And do you guys have control
over
the choice
to like not kill her? Yeah, a little bit. A little bit. I mean, as much control as anyone had, I think anyone at our level has during that part of the process. We always fight to change, to help to protect everything, and knowing that we're going to lose like half of those battles. But there are like big pivotal kind of, you know, twists like Tara surviving that we definitely wanted to keep under wraps.
And she's so good. She's brilliant. And you wiped,
so good. Yes.
You wiped out the entire Hicks clan.
The bloodline is over.
Yeah, well, that's my question. Are there any remaining members of the family that we don't know about?
Ooh, I mean, it's Scream,
so yeah.
Yeah, there's always room for a retcon somewhere.
Well, the family ties in this one. It's like you need like a spider chart to kind of keep up with everybody. So Sam is Billy's daughter, and she has the hallucinations. Tell me about using Billy.
It was the one thing that I think, at least in the script format, it was like one of the big risks that we were like, holy shit, this movie is going to go there. And we loved it on the page, but it was also one of those things that I think everyone involved, by the way, including like us and the writers who are huge, you know, diehard fans, felt that it was like riding the line, right? We were like up against one of the guardrails of what a Scream movie, what a Scream movie could or should do. And it was one of the things that we were like, well, fuck it, we have to do it. Like, it's such a compelling, again, because it's so tied to the idea of legacy, of heritage, of lineage, it made so much sense to us that he had to be a character in the movie. Like, for us, the idea of a character saying that, we've seen that before, but the idea of a character who's actually living that, right, who has the ghost of her family, of her father present in her life in a really, you know, threatening way, trying to steer her in a very specific direction. We just thought that was such an interesting, fun way to dramatize that conflict. And ultimately, you know, we love that, again, it's all part of the Ghostface's plan, right? And sort of folding things back, bringing things back to the original, and you know, Tara surviving at the beginning, all of these little pieces after they all fall into place, you know, and the movie kind of gets recontextualized. You go, fuck, right. It all makes sense going all the way back to that first scene, those first phone calls. That's really the sort of trick of these movies is, you know, when you know the outcome, you get to watch it with fresh eyes and sort of see the design in a different way.
I just wanted to meet Skeet.
I was gonna say.
I will say one of the craziest experiences we had on this, and this was like right at the end of the movie, he was on set shooting, and we also shot a bunch of crime scene photos that were going to appear on a screen in one of the movies that we didn't end up using. But we actually had Skeet in the shirt with the bullet hole in his forehead, posed in the hallway where he's killed in the first movie. And it was so fucking surreal being in the house with Skeet in full, like, and accurate, like, to the blood mark. You know, all the costume department, makeup department had stills from the first movie, and we're just designing him to look so specifically. We also shot images of the aftermath of Stu with the TV on his head using a featured extra. Like, we designed the end of the first movie for crime scene photos, and bummed that they didn't end up in the movie, but it was one of those moments where it was like, fuck, we are in a meta experience.
We have them. We'll have to release those, because that was, they're cool.
Yeah, you can't keep those back. But that sort of mindset that you had with Skeet would have been exactly the same, surely, when you first walked in and saw the recreation of the house. That must have just been mad.
I think the recreation of the house was one of the most surreal elements and biggest surprises for everybody that came back. I mean, I just remember like walking through and just seeing Nev like wander off and walk through the house by herself, and how emotional she was as she was looking at everything that we recreated on a soundstage in North Carolina to match this house in Northern California. Skeet the same way. He walked through on that very last day of shooting for all of us, and it was just like he had no words, and you could just see in his eyes the way it, you know, was affecting him, and the way he looked at all of us and said like, this is kind of insane and surreal, and honestly never thought this would happen 25 years ago when they were shooting this in Northern California, that Scream would become what it actually did become for so many people, and the franchise that it did become for movie fans and everything else. And then to be back on a soundstage that where this house is recreated down to the inch. And, you know, it was a fascinating experience. And for us as fans of Scream, walking into this house and getting to play Scream with these Scream characters, it was that part was like truly a childhood dream come true.
It's like the biggest doll's house of all time, isn't it?
Yeah. Truly.
And so in capital letters, you did it. You got rid of him.
Oh, we talked.
Monsters. Dwight? Yeah.
Monsters.
We,
do you feel
we
like monsters?
Yeah, it was hard. I mean, it was hard. And it was hard on a personal level too, because we were just getting to know David, and you know, we have so much respect for him. And for Dewey and everything he created over the last 25 years. And I think there was like something very solemn about that whole part of the shoot, you know? And I mean, I think we all wore button downs that day to the shoot, and kind of like, we took it, you know, it's not like we take our job seriously all the time, but there was like a special respect that day. And to go back a little further, I mean, it was one of the things that, you know, that and Billy, right? Those were the two things that there were a lot of conversations about. Are we really doing this? Are we really doing this? Are we really doing this? And, you know, up until we started shooting, it was still kind of up in the air. And then when we actually shot it, we shot one take of a safety where a doctor comes out and tells Courtney and Nev that he made it out of surgery and he'll be all right. You know, and I think, you know, kind of like a lot of the things we've been talking about, I think in our heart of hearts, we knew that there was no way we could ever use that because so much of the movie is hinged on that. And it's about that. And in order to have that real emotion and to really like make the movie make you feel something and to really go there, you can't hold back. I think we would be disappointed if we did like the watered down light version of this movie and it just came off like a kind of a bubblegum fan service thing. I think we wanted to make sure that it had teeth, and that was, you know, that was part of it. But it was hard on a professional level and also on a personal level. It was because we love Dewey as much as anybody. Like,
yeah,
sucked.
Does it feel like that had to happen, whether it was him or somebody else at this point from your perspective, not necessarily as the creative team, but if you'd have gone into this as a fan, I think everybody thought something like this might happen, but does it have to happen at this point to move the story in a new direction?
Yeah, I go for it.
No, I mean, I think we all felt in our guts that, you know, for this thing to move like into the next generation, you have to kill your heroes, you know? And I think we've obviously seen that in the Marvel movies. We've seen that in the Star Wars movies, and it's supposed to hurt, right? Like I think the point is, and the reason, you know, those characters, one of the ways, you know, those characters are so valuable. And by the way, I think Wes and Kevin did this really well in all of the Scream movies, right? You never want the characters to die. Like there's never someone you just can't wait to get their comeuppance. Like they're all people that you connect to and you care about. And so, yeah, it's supposed to hurt, but we also think that's also where the new beginnings sort of live, right? You have to be willing to kind of close a certain chapter in order to start telling a new story. And the stories that continue after those moments are all the richer because we're now reflecting on the loss of something that's so dear to us, right? Like it just kind of injects everything with this real sense of emotionality. And for us, it brings Sydney back into the movie in such a real way, like just on a story structure level. She comes back because of Dewey and of course that pair, Gail and Sid, are essential in the movie resolving itself and the story resolving itself. So it just, for as much as it hurt, it was like, fuck yeah, but the things that we love, they sometimes hurt, and that's a part of the experience and we have to be willing to go there.
Yeah. And also just to throw it out there really quick, just the whole series started with the bait and switch of Drew Barrymore. And I think to do anything less than like kind of pull the rug out from under the audience would have been a disservice, whether we want it as fans or not.
Right.
It's, you know, it's part of Scream.
Right. And also one of the best compliments I think that we've received at like after, you know, this first weekend is people immediately going like, I immediately went back and watched the first one again. And when you get to see a character like Dewey and see his trajectory and, you know, you go back and you live in that first movie again, you realize it's like, oh, that movie is out. All these movies are out there forever now. And we get to see this entire lifespan of work, you know, that David did as Dewey and watch him evolve. And honestly, I think David, every day on set he just brought a different energy and a different presence that I think we all absolutely pulled off of. And I think the new cast absolutely pulled off of it as well. And it just helped motivate everybody else to really be in the moment with David when they're working on a scene with him.
That's the
I mean, just there's a ghost Billy. There can be a ghost Dewey. Well, I mean, why not rule it out?
Ghost Dewey, yeah.
No one's ever gone. That idea that what we had 25 years ago, the sort of self-referential stuff that Kevin brought to it and the way Wes brought that to life, all the conversations I've had with everybody involved in that over the last year have all kind of gone, how do you keep that idea fresh 25 years on when the world has changed so much and the way we consume everything is so different? The toxic fandom idea, that's what everybody was leaning towards, I suppose, and that's kind of where it had to go. And mm-hmm. because that wasn't something that existed 25 years ago. And that's kind of crazy, yeah. Those two parallels between the two pieces of work.
And honestly, I think that what with Scream and with the meta awareness of what the world is at any given time, it allows you to do that, right? Because you're able to comment on the world as it is today. And not as it is today, like in a traditional sense, but as it is like right now and even like the months ahead of us. I think all the Screams seem like a little bit ahead of the time. That's why they were always ahead of the audience a little bit. What they were commenting on, what they were calling out about the state of horror, the state of movies, or the state of entertainment, or the state of celebrity and the state of, you know, being popular and being an influencer. Like if you go back to rewatch Scream 4 now, people totally understand everything that's going on in that, because
it's
like they wanted to be
reappraised. The value of that movie has been sort of redefined now because of that.
And I think that's exactly what the meta-ness of Scream allows us to do. We get to hold up the mirror very personally, very intimately, and very directly to all of us as fans about things that we've loved and the way movies actually show us that, you know, and obviously building off like the backlashes of like the new Star Wars movies and anything else that has been rebooted over the last several years, and using that to our advantage and being like, this is what happens like when we all either adamantly hate or adamantly love something, and we need to really tailor expectations in a way that we can all get along a little bit better. You know, still have our very own personal opinions about everything, but like let's civilize the debate maybe just a touch.
Well,
tiptoeing into some dangerous waters here.
Yeah, I would just say that like I think the thing that was so exciting about this project to us was that we were not only having a conversation about something that I think we're all kind of aware of, right? That's the way that we engage with our entertainment is just, it's different and it's evolved, but that we consider ourselves a part of the group that the movie is also having a conversation about, right? It's not, the fun thing about the self-reflexivity of these movies is that we are fans making a movie about fans that want to make a better movie in a franchise. And that is a fucking insane level of meta-ness that we always could connect to. Like the movie, for as much as we're like taking shots at like fandom and toxicity, we consider ourselves to be a part of that community, right? We are fans. We had expectations about what we wanted this movie to be. We had expectations about what we wanted the Star Wars, every franchise to be, right? And I think, but it's rare and it's a very uniquely Scream thing that it gets to actually talk about that stuff in a way that is not subtext, right? There's no, the world of the movie is our world. It is a reflection of the current state of the genre and of the business. And it was really fun to play in that, you know, sandbox and to be self-deprecating, honestly, to be like, yeah, we're guilty of some of this shit. Like, but, and it's probably not great. And we know that we're not going to cross a certain line, but let's have a whole conversation about what this means and the kind of energy that it has now, especially online.
Yeah.
It's a conversation. It's not a soapbox. It's a let's talk about it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And it's like you said, Chad, they sit in their right moments in time, don't they? And kind of reflect everything that's going on in the world at that point. And this one, you know, will definitely do that as well. Quickly, because our time is nearly up. You provided number four fans with a very lovely Easter egg that Kirby is alive and well.
There is some debate online right now.
Also, Judy's still making lemon squares.
For all the fours out there.
And at what point do you announce number six?
That's a great question. I don't think we have an answer for it, but
we do not have that answer.
But we would love to. So, I mean, we had an incredible time making this. Everything about this has been, I think it's just exceeded all our expectations. So we jump at the chance to go do another one.
And you, Nevin, Courtney, do you think their intentions would be to return?
I sure hope so, Nev, Courtney, if you're listening.
Yeah, I think what we can say is that, you know, Guy and Jamie like left it all on the field with this first script, but I think they definitely have a plan about how it moves forward. And if this script is half as good as the last one, then I think it's gonna be, we'll be involved. We will want to be a part of it.
Should we make an appointment to speak in a year, maybe?
Yes, please.
Yeah, let's talk again.
Let's just manifest this.
Oh, congratulations. And thank you so much for taking the time to chat. I really do appreciate it. It's been an amazing journey just to follow the production and then just see it obviously back on a big screen. And you guys are wonderful. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Thank you really, so much.
Yeah. Take care.
Talk to you in a year.
Yes. Yeah.
Thank you so much to Matt, Tyler and Chad for being part of the Woodsboro podcast and chatting to me in this episode. I'm literally over the moon that they took the time to do it. Their obvious passion for Scream and the saga's fans isn't just clear in the way they talk about it. It's now up there on movie screens for everyone to see as well. And there's no doubt that if the series continues beyond this point, which I do think it will, and if these boys continue to hold the reins, it's going to be in safe and also very scary hands. Also, they have to come back because we didn't even get a chance to chat about Amber and Richie. Ah, there's always next time. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Woodsboro Podcast. Please rate and subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And if you'd like to join the conversation, then you can find more on social media at the Woodsboro Pod. And you can find me on social media too at This Is Alex James. We'll be right back.